ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 2, text number 8, is that correct? Bano imau bhagavataha chatapatrapatro shanto apunka ruchirao atitik madantao kasmai yuyungshasi vane Vicharan Navidmaha Shemaya Naha Jadadiyam Tava Vikramaha Astu. Bana Vimo Bhagavatakshatapatta Patro. Shanta vapunkar ruchiravati tikmadanto kasmaya yungsha sivane vicharan nividma kshemaya no jadadiyam tava vikramostu. Bana vimo bhagavatakshata patra patro shanta vapunka ruchiravati tigmadanto kasmaya yungsha sivane vicharana vedma Shemaya no jadadiyang tava vikramostu. Bana vimo bhagavatakshata patra patro. Shanta vapunka ruchiravati tigmadanto. Kasmaya yungsha sivane vicharana vidma kshemaya no jadadiyam tava vikramostu. Bana vimo bhagavatakshata patra patro avapunka ruchiravati tigmadanto kasmaya yungsha sivane vicharan nividma no jadadiyam tava vikramostu. Vānāvimo bhagavata kṣata patra patro Antava punta rachiravati tegmadanto Saya yungsha sivane vicharanni vidmaha Maya no jadadi yang tabavit namostu Pana vimo bhagavata kshata patra patro Shantava punka machirava titik madanto Kasmaya yongsha sivane vicharani vidmaha Yayo yadadiyam tava vikramostu Matajis A little louder, please. Vānāvimo bhagavata kṣata patra patro Shantāva punka ruchirāvati tegmadanto Kasmaya yungsha sivane vicharanni vidmaha Shemaya no jadadiyam tava vikramostu. It's nice, we're back on verse again now, meter, so to speak. Srila Prabhupada very much liked the devotees to chant these verses loudly, repetitively. It's a science. It's like we repetitively chant Hare Krishna over and over and over again. There's no stopping, no beginning, no end. Krishna has no beginning or end. And similarly, these verses, they're transcendental. Every verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, as we've been hearing, is totally transcendental. And one of the... They didn't bring the achaman today. Today we need it. Never mind. There's no even water for drinking. Is it a fast day, Nirjala Ekadashi today? It's Jayadev Goswami's disappearance day today. We don't observe complete fast today, do we? Not a fast day, is it? The days go faster and faster as you go older, but a different type of fast day. Prabhupada emphasized that, you know, we should chant these mantras. They're very purifying. And this section, I don't know what today, let's see, but this section particularly deals with, you can say, the common, a very common affair of becoming tempted by the sense objects. Of course, it's not by chance. It's Krishna arranges sense objects are there because we have a little bit of a tendency towards attraction to the sense objects. But one of the processes of training children, specifically anyone, never too late, is to chant loudly mantras, Vedic mantras. They have a unique, Sanskrit language also has a unique effect. In fact, in many places in the world, I don't know about many, but in several Western schools, not anything to do with Krishna consciousness directly, they teach Sanskrit, and the children learn Sanskrit, Western kids, some of the more erudite schools, because they know that this has a very important effect on character. It's not just a language. It's a sound vibration which affects our consciousness.
And specifically from the childhood beginning, there's a much better chance, depending on the character of the child to begin with, to a certain extent, but there's a much better chance that the child will not be so disturbed by mundane sound vibrations, or mundane attractions. So it's a scientific process. And we do only a little bit, maybe, but loud recitation of verses is a very effective method of sense control. So Prabhupada liked the devotees to chant these verses loud and clear, repetitively. We'll read the word for word. Bano, two arrows. We heard the two bows yesterday. Today we've got two arrows, getting closer. Imao, these. Bhagavata, of you, the most powerful. Shatapatrapatro, having feathers. Feathers. You know what? Feathers. Feathers. Having feathers like the petals of a lotus flower. A bit long, that wasn't it? Anyway, you got the idea. Shanto, peaceful. Apunka, without a shaft. Ruchirao, very beautiful. Atitikmadantao, having a very sharp point. Kasmai, when. Yuyungshasi, you want to pierce. Vane, in the forest. Vicharan, loitering. Navidmaha, we cannot understand. Kshemaya, for welfare. Naha, of us. Jadadiyam, who are dull-headed. Tava, your. Vikramaha, prowess. Astu, maybe. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace. Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. You should always remember every day. And actually reading the other day, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying that we should glorify the spiritual master for at least 1 hour a day. Because this is a form of glorification. We're hearing and glorifying his words. We sing his glorifications at Mangalarti, Guru Puja, different times. But it's good to try to, speaking to myself, but to try to be conscious. To try to be conscious or aware of his association. It's not just a physical interaction, but a conscious awareness. It purifies our heart. As we heard the other day, it's solely by the mercy of the spiritual master that we can get Krishna. And it's only by the mercy of Krishna that we can possibly become delivered from our condition in the world, in this material world. It's entirely dependent upon that mercy. So we try to be conscious of their association. Take the mercy. Prabhupada many times said, the mercy is there, you just have to take it. One time, here in Vrindavan, Prabhupada said that, I'm giving you Krishna. This is in London, actually, he said. I'm giving you Krishna. Just take him. Just take Krishna. Prabhupada's giving us this opportunity to, instead of taking material sense gratification as the goal of life, my highest pleasure in life, Prabhupada's giving us the real pleasure, the reservoir of all pleasure, Krishna. We take advantage of this opportunity. Then, because this is a chapter dealing with the activities of Maharaj Agnidra, the son of King Priyavata. We've been hearing about that. Then Agnidra, because at this time, Purvachiti, the Apsaras, appeared on the scene, tinkling her bells, just like devotees do the same. We go on Sangirtan tinkling the bells, right? Sometimes people say, the Hare Krishna devotees, those people who tinkle bells, bell tinklers. And we're the same thing. We're trying to attract the attention of the conscious of the mind of the public by tinkling the bells. We bang a few drums and a few other things. But bell tinkling is also there, very attractive. Sometimes it's said that the kartals are like the ankle bells of the gopis, tinkling. It's attracting people away from Maya to Krishna. Similarly, you know, Krishna also has beautiful ankle bells. Beautiful, we heard yesterday his beautiful features, his qualities, to attract our attention. We have to have that panandrishtva navartate, that higher taste. That's to be an alternative. It's not just a question of no, 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 no. Sometimes we forget. It's a positive thing. We have to have that alternative. Doesn't matter who we are, it's the same for everyone. Sannyasi, brahmachari, grihastha, woman, man, black, white, big, small, fat, thin, whatever we are. Process is the same. We have to somehow or another become attracted to Krishna in his various forms. He's very kind. He comes in many forms. Prasadam, easy one. Holy name. Here we have Bhagavatam. Then Agnidra, so now it's getting closer. Then Agnidra observed the glancing eyes of Purvachiti and said, "My dear friend, you have two very powerful arrows, namely your glancing eyes. Can you hear at the back? You sure? Because in this weather, the voice sometimes, I noticed everyone's voice was a little bit down, a little bit rough. It's nice, cold, damp weather. I hope you can hear. Try to hear. Hearing is the secret. Secret of, let's say, purification of consciousness, mercy, but the method of reception is our endeavor to hear. Try to hear. Hearing is the primary, you could say, sacrifice which we have to perform. Those arrows have feathers like the petals of a lotus flower. Very soft and beautiful. Although they have no shafts, they are very beautiful, and they have very sharp, piercing points. They appear very peaceful, and thus it seems that they will not be shot at anyone. You must be loitering in this forest to shoot those arrows at someone. But I cannot understand whom it is. My intelligence is dull. I cannot combat you. Indeed, no one can equal you in prowess. And therefore I pray that your prowess will be for my good fortune." Purport. Agnidra thus began appreciating Purvachiti's powerful glance upon him. He compared her glancing eyes to very sharp arrows. Although her eyes were as beautiful as lotuses, they were simultaneously like shaftless arrows. And Agnidra was therefore afraid of them. He hoped that her glances upon him would be favorable because he was already captivated. And the more captivated he became, the more impossible it would be for him to remain without her. Agnidra therefore prayed to Puravachitti that her glances at him would be auspicious, not futile. In other words, he prayed that she would become his wife. End of purport. So this is a somewhat common, graphically explained here in the verse and the purport, very common experience, as we were hearing from Janardhan Maharaj yesterday, Bhakti Anugraha Janardhan Maharaj, how this attraction is there amongst all species of life. By nature we are attracted. Nothing wrong with that. We're meant to be attracted as iron filings are attracted to a magnet. We can't avoid it. It's just a matter of the object of our attraction. In this case, we've been hearing, of course, Agnidra. The object of his attraction at this point of time is that he wants to have a wife. He wants to enjoy, at least on the mental platform, the ideas there, that one can enjoy if one gets married. One can satisfy one's desires. Some of you are married. Some of you have been married, maybe you're not married anymore. Some of you are thinking about getting married. Some of you are trying to avoid the thought of getting married. Some have been married several times. Right? Truth is the truth. One time there was a story of this guru and his disciple. Don't take it wrongly, because, you know, married life or single life, you know, whatever is favorable for Krishna consciousness, if one has the right husband, right wife, it can be very favorable for spiritual life. But still, it's not always what we dream it's going to be. I know when I got married a long time ago, my wife thought I was a pure devotee. She soon found out I wasn't. Things changed quickly. And my thoughts about her being, you know, as I say, something which, you know, the mind dreams of, soon came to an end too. But still, the object of married life, the object for a devotee of everything, is Krishna consciousness. Then it can become favorable. Yes, there will be lessons to be learned. Some of them not so pleasing. Some of them, oh boy, why did I do this? Why did I get myself into this? Sometimes we may think, but that's what we have to go through to learn the lessons of life, to wake up. And children, responsibility, all expands once we have the wife. The expansion begins. That's why she's known as Stri. And literally means expansion. As soon as married life is there, you've got to have a house, more or less. It's rare to find a wife who's satisfied living in the Brahmacharya ashram for too long. When I joined ISKCON, it was the case. The husband and wife, they lived in the Brahmacharya and Brahmacharya ashrams. Kids lived with the wife in the Brahmacharya ashram, driving the other girls mad. But that was how it was. We all did the same thing. It's not usually the case now, maybe some exceptions. Usually the wife in this day and age is not happy to live in a straw hut like Sudama Vipra. Very rare. No electricity, no washing machine, No electric cooker, no heaters, no mobile phones, no mod cons, simple sari, no makeup. It's very rare. Maybe some exceptions. Kali Yuga is usually quite complicated. You've got to go to work, got to get a job to pay for it all. So Kali Yuga works. And children come, struggle. Those rays of Vishnu turn out to be a little different than the rays of Vishnu. Yeah, monsters. No, excuse me. Lovely. Different, it varies. Every kind of variety is there. Krishna arranges exactly. They are the right ones for us to teach us the lessons we need to know, to release us of our dream, to wake us up, and vice versa. We're those parents, whatever they may think of their parents, just arranged for their necessary sojourn of life also. Nothing by chance. Krishna, for the devotee, is really trying to make arrangements, even if we fall a little bit into that little underkupa, that well of family life. We may get a little stuck up sometimes. It's quite common in the beginning when we get married, get a little bit sort of like carried away with it all, trying to, especially if you've been, you know, as I say, avoiding it maybe a little too long or something. And you kind of jump in there, you haven't had good training. Brahmacharini training is not this kind of training where you kind of like look on the opposite sex with horror or something, you know. Yamunacharya's prayer doesn't say when he thinks of women, he spits at them. That's not what it says. He spits at the thought, not at the woman. Sometimes brahmacharis have it a little wrong, and they sort of, women, get out of here. He said, brahmachari, go away. Sometimes fanatic brahmacharinis are there too, occasionally. It's a sure sign they want to get married, if they like. Both ways, usually. Is maturity, and what is, you know, compatible, you could say, for the maturing, spiritually, materially, of the conditioned soul. And that's not easy to work out. In Kali Yuga, it's multiply very difficult, and we make so many mistakes. It's just the way it is. In Kali Yuga, it's an ocean of faults. But the principle is there, at least. It's to try to purify our consciousness. And sometimes it does go through a little bit of not everybody, some devotees are mature, we've seen, right from the beginning, right match and maturity is there. And they don't waver in their devotion. You do get those exceptions. Or sometimes you start off like, you know, fanatics, not fanatics, but very enthusiastic. Don't follow all the principles strictly. We're going to be the ideal grihastha couple. The perfect example, yad-yad-acharati shrestas-tate-vetaro-janaha. The whole world will be looking at us. We're going to have children who are going to save the world. We're going to show the perfect example. Our preaching by our example will change the lives of everybody. It's nice to have that, but it doesn't always work out like that. In some cases, but it doesn't always work out. The struggles and the challenges and the various tests that we have to go through, don't become disheartened or depressed. There's light at the end of every tunnel, even if we're deep in the underkupa. My tunya agara in the shackles of even sometimes sex life, let's not be, you know, too, what do you say, holier than thou, to kind of like up in a dream cloud or something. It's pretty much understood that most grihasthas are not following 100% as much as they would like to, or as much as they, as we prophesy, as we speak. Oh yes, we do this and we do that. Of course we should try to. Reading verses from Bhagavatam, there are hundreds of verses, we won't have time. It's a very good book, especially for grihasthas. called Brahmachari and Krishna Consciousness. If you agree, Hasti, you haven't got this book, it's a very good book. But you have to be mature enough to read it. It's actually, you know, Prabhupada spoke. You know how many times he mentioned, I mean, I don't know, just the two words coupled together, sex life, about 2,500 times. And that's only the recorded times. That's just the recorded ones. I mean, millions, probably millions, I don't know. But many times, not recorded. Thousands and thousands of times he spoke on this subject. And in many of the lectures, Prabhupada would say, it is not our business to talk about this. We do not want to talk about this. But it's such an important subject. Basically, it's the underlying problem of all problems. Practically every problem is based on sex desire. Even managerial problems, maybe subtle sex desire, name, fame, adoration, distinction. Different forms. Subtle desire expands. Proprietorship. It's also sex desire. Control over others. All sex desire. It's the root of all evil. Is that what they say? No. Money. They say money is the root of all evil. They say love makes the world go round. And round and round and round and round. As we go in our samsara cycle, this so-called love, and Krishna doesn't call it love. What does he call it? Kama esha, krodha esha, rajaguna samudbhavaha, mahashama mahapapma, vidyenam ira varinam. Varinam, this all, this enemy, the all-devouring sinful enemy of the world, mahapapma, mahavarinam. It's the enemy. It's lust. Anger, as we read the other day, Prabhupada said, anger is the younger brother of lust. It's a big family. Lust has a very big family. Lots of brothers, sisters, children, uncles, aunts, grandfathers. Very big family. Once you marry into that family, boy, there's no end. There's no end to it. It never comes to an end. Huh? Isn't it? Isn't that what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita? Dushpurena lena cha. That this kamarupena gontiha, this kamarupena, this form of lust, burns like fire. Burns like, more you feed it, the more it rages. By Prabhupada's grace alone, we have a chance to get out of this blazing fire of material existence. He's giving us this opportunity. I was going to read something, but the printer wasn't working this morning, so we can't. We can read about Jayadev Goswami. I've got a little bit of notes there. The story I never told of, I don't know who told the story, but probably I don't think, maybe Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj told the story, of a disciple. It even happens, even in our own ISKCON society. This may not be an ISKCON, but there's this disciple of the Guru who had a little bit of inclination towards the opposite sex. He wanted to get married. Okay. He chose his wife. Or maybe he didn't, but he had a wife. Arranged. It didn't work out. I can't handle it, I'm getting out. He left. Separated. Came back to the Guru. Guru Maharaj, that marriage didn't work out. I want to get married again. And the Guru could see he was going to do it anyway. It's like Prabhupada sometimes, he allowed these things because he knew they were going to do it anyway. Not a question of coming and asking permission. Asking for advice, but rather asking permission. He got married again. Didn't work out. It went on 3 or 4 times. Kept coming back to the Guru, I want to get married again. Okay. Next time he came back, the Guru was sat there at the table. He had a bowl of very, very hot chilies. The hottest chili you can imagine. They call them sharks, these little tiny dry things, so small, they're like fire. And he saw his Guru Maharaj was eating chilies one after the next. Another one. And he said to him, Guru Maharaj, why are you eating those chilies? Oh, he said, I'm sure that eventually one of these chilies will become sweet. You may laugh, boys, and don't take it wrongly, young ladies and grihasthas, because it doesn't apply just to this. It applies to material life in general. Life after life after life we think we can enjoy. And it's not like, you know, sometimes we hear, you know, but most of the verses they're talking about, almost like they're direct. And in one sense they are. I mean, let's see, Bhagavatam was spoken to, I never saw any mention of ladies present when the Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken, initially. It was spoken to very advanced male members of society so that they could disseminate this knowledge throughout the spectrum of society. That's the idea. Their responsibility. So when there are verses which seemingly almost put the ladies, the women in a category of being almost insignificant or almost a burden, it's misunderstood sometimes. They have to be understood by maturity, not by simply a hammer. People, all they know is, if all people know to do is hammer nails in, they cannot understand these things. Misuse of knowledge. It has to be understood properly as to what the goal is. After all, don't forget, ladies, in your previous life you were a man. And because you were infatuated by a woman, you become a woman. That's how it works. That's why it says infatuation of a woman is the greatest bondage. Because we go from one to the other. It's not, I'm a man, she's a woman. It's a load of rubbish. Right now you have a male or female body, you have to use it appropriately to escape this material world, that's all. To get out of it. It's not a question of one maybe better for certain things, better for other things. So what? If you use it properly, it will have the same effect. If we misuse it and use it for someone else's business, what Bhagavad Gita practically is aimed at is learning or understanding what is the proper utilization of the situation we're in, the capacity we have, the abilities we have, the karmas we have, etc., etc., so that we can get free of all this bondage in the material world, so we can get free of karma, lust in its many, many forms. That's the idea. But because, especially in Kali Yuga, envy, ignorance, envy are so prominent. People don't understand this. Even we devotees often don't understand it. And we think that by manipulation to a certain way that we'll achieve success. But what is the use of fame amongst the infamous? We want to please Krishna. We want to please Prabhupada. It's not about pleasing ourselves or pleasing our groups. Pleasing society, who cares a damn? Yeah. What difference does it make? You please a bunch of idiots, so what? Please the material society, for what purpose? I mean, if it helps them to become Krishna conscious, fine, but otherwise it's a complete waste of time. And Prabhupada said it one time, even if nobody is pleased with what you're doing, if Krishna's pleased, then it's perfect. But if everyone else is pleased and Krishna's not pleased, it's a complete waste of time. Shrama Evi Kevalam. It's a sacrifice, accepting that. It's regular, just like in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna explains that this, you know, it's very hard, this lust has captured our mind, our intelligence, our senses. We're captured. We're like prisoners of lust. We're stuck there again and again. And what chance do we have? We're in a world where basically come. I mean, if you go to London, Hari Ramprabhu will know very well. It's quite ironic. Some of you are maybe from that part of the world. By Prabhupada's grace, we are now here. As God knows where we would be. And some of you have been to London, and possibly you've been to Piccadilly Circus. You may have seen this kind of famous landmark in London, a tourist spot. And it's amazing. It's almost like Maya's trick. Now, Piccadilly Circus is like the, I don't know what you call it, it's like the vortex. It's like the kind of the pivot where they call it the red light district. You've heard this term, red light district? You know what? Most of you would never have an idea. I'm sure you've never heard of a red light district. Huh? You're all very innocent and pure-hearted. But we're coming from a different arena, different country. And most of the cities, big cities in the Western world, have areas called red light districts. That doesn't mean that they're celebrating Chinese New Year, where there's red lights everywhere. It means something else. It's a place where you go, and particularly in that area, we heard a little bit about society girls yesterday. Today we call it prostitute. In Vedic society, any woman who was not chaste to one husband was called a prostitute. Any woman who was seen loosely in society talking to a man other than her husband was a prostitute. One time Jayapataka Maharaj was in Mayapur, early days, maybe 1971, just after they obtained the land, or 72, whatever year it was, 72 I think. And he was practicing his Bengali on one local Bengali farmer. And he was asking him a simple question, "Have you been to Calcutta?" The farmer said, "Yes, I went there once." "Only once? I will never go again," he said. "Why?" "Because I saw a man and a woman in public holding each other's hands. I will never go to that sinful city ever again," he said. That's what the farmer said. He considered that they were just holding their hand was a sinful act in public. Can we imagine? Can we imagine the day that we're living in? Even here in Vrindavan, we see devotees walking around doing this. Going even further than that. We've lost it. But we haven't gained it, whichever way it may be. And the Western world, of course, is like nobody thinks, as we say, nobody bats an eyelid. Nobody thinks twice about it. It's just totally normal. Men holding men's hands. Of course, that's common in Bengal, but that's not because they're gay. That's a different reason there. In the West, where our temple is. Now, that area near Piccadilly Circus, between there and our temple in Soho Street, is called, part of it's called Soho, and that's the center of the red light district where people go to enjoy sex life with anybody and anything they can get their hands on, literally. Man, woman, dog, you name it. You can have anything you want, practically. It's full of it. Full of it. And our temple's right on the periphery, on the edge. And next door is one of the pubs changed a little bit. It used to be one of the best gay pubs in town, but it's changed a little bit. The whole area is just full of it. Very difficult for people. They're exposed to this constantly. The newspapers, everywhere, full of this trap. This Maitunya Agra, the shackles of sex life. So strong. People are trained up from childhood, where there's a school in Kansas one time. And they had a course, the American government, they made a rule that every school should teach a course on safe sex life. Every school. There was one school in Kansas that said, the headmistress, she said, no, I will not allow this to be taught. And the education authority said, then if you don't allow it, you'll be fired, you'll be sacked. You're out of a job. I don't care, but I am not, over my dead body, going to allow this course to be taught. I said, why not? Said, because there's no education here for no sex. If you don't include a section on no sex, I will not allow this to be taught in my school. She was very adamant. She won the case. They had to introduce the possibility that a teenager could live with no sex. It was unheard of. It's just something that people don't even... You're crazy? People think you're crazy. No sex, you're mad. People think like that. And they're educated practically like that. Forcibly sometimes. It's such a difficult age. So difficult. And right there in the middle of London in Piccadilly Circus, who is the deity? They have a deity, actually. Well, not really a deity, but it's like that. On a column... in the center, certainly on a column, on a statue. That's Trafalgar Square. But in Piccadilly Circus, who is the statue? Right in the middle of this red light district, who is the statue? Cupid. Can you imagine? Standing there with his bow and arrows, shooting his arrows at everyone all around him. And people are circumambulating, sitting there. It's amazing. It's almost ironic that Maya's manifested this tempting form of Cupid right in the middle of London. It's like that everywhere, all over the world. How to get out of this is so difficult. Such a trap. Many of us are born in it. Some of you don't know. You're born in pious Indian families. Even now being exposed... the internet, gosh, so dangerous. It can be great. Same with Facebook. It can be, you know, a disaster. It can be used for preaching. Nothing's a disaster in itself, but it can be if we're not careful. And we have to be very, very careful who we associate, the literatures we read, what we do. It's careful. Very careful. Therefore, Krishna says, this lust is very difficult, but it can be overcome by regulating the senses. That means, as Prabhupada describes again and again, it means how to engage our senses favorably, properly. Just like in grihastha life, sex life is there. And, you know, it's a truthful fact that many grihasthas aren't able to follow strictly the standard of once a month. Remembering Hayagriva, when Srila Prabhupada was discussing one time, I can't remember who was, with somebody, these standards. Oh, it was with that, was his name Mr. Gardner or something, early days, and this one lawyer in New York. He was asking about sex life. How is it, how can a man live without sex? Father said, oh, then you get married. Oh, I get married. He said, then you can have sex once a month only for propagating children. Gosh, he said, that's not possible. Hayagriva then said, he laughed, he said, Swamiji, once a month for having children? And when, brother said, and when the wife is pregnant, no more sex until like 6 months after childbirth. So you're talking of like over a year. He said, God, may as well forget the whole thing, Srila Prabhupada, he said. Prabhupada said, yes, you have understood properly. But you can't, you know, we're conditioned souls. Prabhupada is trying to release us, so obviously it takes time. It doesn't happen immediately. It doesn't happen immediately. We had to work towards it. And not justify it, not think it's perfectly all right, not be, dishonest. Work towards perfection. Associate with devotees nicely. Continue chanting the holy names of Krishna. Render whatever service you can to the Vaishnavas. Grihastha ashram is ideal for that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in Grihastha ashram, the first duty is to receive guests and serve devotees nicely. It's a great opportunity to get mountains of blessings. That's what we need. And to try to put Krishna in the center of our lives. Keep him there. Even though we have our shortcomings. Wherever we may be, we all have shortcomings. Prabhupada said in Kali Yuga, neither brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas can follow perfectly. If I criticize you, you criticize me, we'll all go away. No one's perfect in this Kali Yuga. It's Kale Darshana De Rajan, ocean of faults. Well, let us try to be encouraging to each other and help each other and be confidential in certain situations. It's important to reveal one's mind in confidence in the right situation. Don't be afraid, but it has to be the right situation. Krishna will help. Kshemaya, here the word is mentioned by King Agnidra that he's hoping that this uniting with this the Apsara will be auspicious. But Krishna says he helps. He helps those. The real auspiciousness is that one gets Krishna's help. His mercy. His mercy. It's not all about being a perfect externalist. Rules and regulations are there for helping to purify internally. But the key even there is the mercy of the Lord and the devotees. The service to the Vaishnavas, no matter how fallen situation we're in, do not try to justify or change the scripture. Just be humble. Humility is absolutely required. That yes, I'm not following or I'm not up to the standard, but be humble. Don't try to put on a show or deceitfulness or trying to, you know, justify that this is wrong, that we don't have to follow and so on. Just be a little humble. Gosh, we're all in the same boat practically when we get honest about it. How many brahmacharis never think of sex life? Never think of a woman? Never talk of, I mean, how many? Some maybe. But, you know, we have to keep endeavoring, keep chanting, keep serving, and so on. Well, time and tide wait for no man. And the wedding party, there's so many weddings going on right now in Vrindavan by the looks of it. The wedding party goes on, and Prabhupada, when he was talking to Hayagriva, he said, I think Satsarup Maharaj, he wrote to Satsarup Maharaj. And he said, yes, you have understood correctly. The anchor, you may know the story of the wedding party. The wedding party is going by boat down the river. We don't get this in the West very often, unless you're very rich. They're going down the boat to the ceremony, marriage ceremony, one side of the family. They all get in the boat, maybe the groom's family or whatever, all getting in the boat, and they pay the boatman to row down the river at night. The oarsmen are rowing and rowing and rowing, and they thought by the morning we'll reach our destination. The morning came, and they saw they had not moved an inch. Not an inch. They'd been rowing like anything, and they were still in the same place. What's gone on here? The oarsmen were tired. They've been rowing for 8 hours. And they were all exhausted. And they said, what happened? And then one little boy saw at the back of the boat, oh, the anchor's still in the ground. We've been rowing all night with the anchor in the ground. And they didn't move. Maybe a few inches, but not far. And Prabhupada said, yes, you've understood. The anchor is sex life. That's the anchor which keeps us in this material world. Just controlling sex life, Prabhupada said, 50% liberated. So many verses that you could read, King Rishi Maharaj, Rishabh Day's verses are there. So many Bhagavatams full of different verses on the importance of overcoming this infatuation, this conditioning by turning our attention towards the lotus feet of Krishna. That's the only saving grace, somehow or another, to keep our attention on Krishna. So I'm just going to read a little bit now and finish there. This is on
Jayadev
Goswami. I'm not going to read much. Bear with us. I don't know much about Jayadev Goswami. We could have Googled. I'm sure Google Guru knows a lot about Jayadev Goswami. Google Goswami. He's very expert. He has more knowledge than anyone I know. Other than Prabhupada. 300 years before, this is Jayadeva Goswami, disappearance day today, 300 years before the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Jayadeva Goswami served as the court pandit of Sri Lakshman Sen, King of Bengal. Jayadeva and Padmavati, his wife and an expert dancer, used to worship Lord Sri Krishna with single-minded devotion. After some time, he left the opulent royal life to live peacefully in a grass hut at Champahati, Navadweep. Here, Jayadeva wrote Gita Govinda. I believe it was this king, or maybe his father, or somebody, who established Navadweep. And you see there's some monuments there of Lakshman Sen and other great kings of that order. And he, more or less, was in one of his pandits there, in his court. One day, while working, he left to live peacefully in a grass hut in Champahati, Navadweep. Some of you may have been to that place. Here, Jayadeva wrote, what did he write? Very famous compilation. Pardon? Gita Govind. One day, while working on Gita Govind, Jayadeva felt inspired to write, Krishna bows down to touch the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. Jayadeva was hesitant to say something which might diminish Lord Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He went to refresh himself with a bath in the Ganga before honoring Radha Madhava's Mahaprasad. In his absence, Krishna himself, disguised as Jayadeva, wrote a line in the Gita Govinda. So he went to take a bath and Krishna came, disguised as Jayadeva, to the home. Padmavati, his wife, was there. He wrote this line, Dehi Padapalavam Udaram. The Lord also accepted Prasadam from Padmavati. She thought it was her husband. She didn't know. Upon returning, Jayadeva was astonished to see the line. Understanding the mystery, Jayadeva cried in spiritual joy and said, Padmavati, we are most fortunate. Sri Krishna himself has written the line, Dehi Padapalavam Udaram, and taken Prasadam from your hand. Gita Govinda expresses the intense feelings of separation that Srimati Radharani felt before the Rasa dance. It also describes the most intimate pastimes of Radha Shamasundra. During Lord Chaitanya's Gambhir Leela in Jagannath Puri, Lord Chaitanya would thoroughly relish hearing the Gita Govinda sung daily by Srup Damodar Mukunda. Very popular, he loved to hear this. Others would sing it. One time Lord Chaitanya was in Jagannath Puri and he heard a very beautiful sound. He went closer. He heard it was somebody in the temple of Jagannath singing Gita Govind. Lord Chaitanya then became mad and went running towards the temple to be there with that whoever that was. He didn't know who it was, who was singing Gita Govinda. Srup Damodar, however, he knew who it was. Govinda knew who it was, his servant. And Govinda, at the last moment, stop, Lord Chaitanya, stop, Lord, stop. He said, it is a woman who is singing. He didn't know if it was a woman or a man. Lord Chaitanya came to external senses and said, Govinda, you have saved my life, because if I were to embrace or touch that woman, I would have been ruined. Showing the example of sannyas life. Very strict. But the sound of the Gita Govinda is incomparable. It's the highest nectar. However, he would relish this daily with Srup Damodar Mukunda and others. The author Jayadeva Goswami describes Gita Govind. Whatever is delightful in varieties of music, whatever is graceful in fine strains of poetry, and whatever is exquisite in the sweet art of love, let the happy and wise learn from the songs of Jayadeva. After finishing Gita Govinda, Jayadeva visited Vrindavan, and then he lived his last in Jagannath Puri. He introduced daily reading of Gita Govinda in the temple for the pleasure of Lord Jagannath. His samadhi is in the 64 samadhis area. So if you're really up to it and you've got an umbrella or whatever, I don't know, it's going to rain today, I'm told. You can go down to the six near Radha Govinda Mandir, 64 samadhis here. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. What kind of poetry is Sri Geet Govinda? Who is qualified to study it? Bhaktivinoda Thakur replies, Geet Govinda is a very special poetry book, full of transcendental mellows of devotional service, and it describes the exalted pastimes of the Supreme Lord. There is no other such book in the world. Since the ordinary readers cannot realize the conjugal mellows of the Supreme Lord, and since they are fond of material enjoyment, their study of Sri Geet Govinda is not perfect. The poet Jayadev Goswami has not offered his book to such readers. Rather, he forbade them to study his book. For persons who are inexperienced in the transcendental mellows of Braj, discussing Jayadev Goswami and his work is proof of their shamelessness. It's not meant for everyone. And Prabhupada said, regarding the songs of Jayadev Goswami, Shita Kamala is not approved. A beautiful song. We used to sing this song. Sometimes Krishna Das Babaji sings, but it is not approved by Srila Prabhupada. Those songs are for Siddha Bhaktas, not for us who are Sadhana Bhaktas or learning Bhaktas. Lord Chaitanya never divulged in public. He enjoyed them in the company of his selected three or four devotees. There is one song by Jayadev, worshipping the ten incarnations, Dasavatar Stotram. He said, this song is all right. In other words, Prabhupada is indicating that we should not read or hear at our stage unless we're actually Siddha Bhaktas, liberated souls. We should not hear this elevated subject matter. Sometimes devotees indulge, but it's not to be done. It's shameless, Prabhupada. Bhaktivinoda says shameless. We're not qualified to hear. We have to take that which we're qualified. That is why Srila Prabhupada spoke so much about the dangers of sex life and how to deal with it. Because that is what we have to deal with. If we've actually transcended, it's another thing. Even the intimate pastimes and the nectar of devotion in discussing Raghunuga Bhakti. Srila Prabhupada, of course, commenting on Rupa Goswami's comment. But he says there, after describing the intimate relationships, the intimate pastimes of the Ragatmakas, Vrindavan, how this subject matter, although we may hear it, he said, this is not to be discussed any further. These topics are not to be discussed unless one is on the liberated platform, free from the effects of the modes of materne, which means free from any inclination for sex desire in its various forms. We may hear it from a pure devotee for purification, but not that we should imitate. Not that we should imitate. We have to take the medicine which is required right now. Otherwise, it will be a dreadful overdose. Hare Krishna. Okay, well, that's it. Time has already expired, more than expired. Srila Jayadev Goswami ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Hari Bol. One time Prabhupada did say, one that has said, that especially these things should be discussed maturely over and over again, referring to sex attraction. Many things he said. He said that we should hear rasa dance as a curative medical, like medicine. But he also said that if one gets disturbed on hearing this, then one shouldn't hear it. One should be careful. Hear submissively from the right source. That can help. Nivritatrishna. Nivritatarshiya begima bhavoshiti chotra manobiraman kutrama shloka gunanam. We hear from the right source and it can purify our consciousness. But we have to be careful. Be very careful. He also said that we should hear the pastime of Shankarchuda, how Krishna kills Shankarchuda, who represents licentious or sensual desire. These pastimes of Krishna book we should hear. They're very purifying to help cleanse us of this tendency. Keep fully engaged in service as much as possible. Many, many things are there. According to time and circumstance, we have to inquire if we don't know what is appropriate. Prabhupada has given us this morning and evening program, which is for that reason, to try to protect us. To protect us from falling into the shackles of sex desire, sex life. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.